First, in his remarks from the White House yesterday morning, President Trump said capturing or killing Islamic State leader Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi was his top national security priority.
The president announced al-Baghdadi killed himself and three of his children during a raid by U.S. forces in northwestern Syria on Saturday.
Under his control, ISIS took thousands of lives across Syria and Iraq, often in large suicide bombings or mass executions. At the peak of his rule, ISIS controlled a chunk of territory about the size of Britain. By 2017, it had lost almost all of that land.
Here's some of what President Trump had to say about al-Baghdadi's death.
A brutal killer, one who has caused so much hardship and death, has violently been eliminated. He will never again harm another innocent man, woman, or child. He died like a dog. He died like a coward. The world is now a much safer place.
So, with al-Baghdadi gone, what happens now with ISIS?
Jessica Stern is a research professor at Boston University's Pardee School of Global Studies and the co-author of ISIS, The State of Terror. She also wrote a piece in the New York Times about what al-Baghdadi's death means for the fight against terrorism. Jessica, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you for having me.
How significant is the death of Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi?
I think it's quite significant. I think it's important. I think he was symbolically extremely important and attractive to his followers. I don't think it's important militarily, but it is extremely important symbolically.
Symbolically, but do we have the sense that he was logistically making important decisions running the show for ISIS still at this point?
That's not clear. What I think is really a really important question is the extent to which he was involved with the so-called wilayat or provinces. And there it looks like he probably was not actively involved himself, but nonetheless, the image of the so-called caliph, I think, is important for attracting groups that might otherwise have aligned with, for example, al-Qaeda. I think there is his presence is important for that reason. He's a descendant of, or claims to be a descendant of Muhammad, the prophet Muhammad, and that seems to be a part of his appeal. Also, he is an Islamic scholar, obviously. Many Muslims do not recognize the version of Islam that he claims to practice and that he promotes. But the fact that he actually is trained as a scholar, it makes him different from many alternatives. That doesn't mean that the group will disappear in any way. I don't believe that, but I nonetheless think that he played an important role.
A big turning point in the development of ISIS was the break with al-Qaeda. What led to that? I've seen people argue it was a personality difference between the leaders of the two groups or a tactical difference with ISIS saying, we can be a nation, we can claim territory where al-Qaeda didn't want to do that. What did you see leading to that break?
Well, there is a difference in that Baghdadi did declare the caliphate here and now, and for al-Qaeda, that was a long-term dream. It wasn't something they were prepared to do immediately. There's also a difference in the level of brutality. Al-Qaeda admonished both Zarqawi, who was the predecessor to Baghdadi. He was the leader of al-Qaeda in Iraq. He was also extremely brutal, and Baghdadi himself, extremely brutal, a level of brutality that we really haven't seen before. But I think the notion that it was more about control and competition for control is probably, if anything, even more important than any ideological differences. It was more who gets to run the more important group and where.
What led a nation or a territory to be at risk of infiltration, of the creation of a group like ISIS in its territory, whether it's original spaces like Syria or Iraq or other countries they've branched out into?
Well, there are a lot of risk factors that political scientists have identified, and they include low opportunity costs for young men's time in the sense that they either are unemployed or underemployed at the level of the nation, poor governance, sectarian tensions, and especially sectarian tensions that lead to conflict or civil war. Those are some of the risk factors. And unfortunately, we see those risk factors present in a number of countries in the Middle East and North Africa and South Asia. And we see it in, obviously, Afghanistan. We see it in Nigeria. We see very serious sectarian tensions. We see it in Somalia. We see it in Libya. And ISIS was able to attract so-called, well, groups, but also claimed provinces in these countries.
We're talking to Jessica Stern from Boston University, co-author of ISIS, The State of Terror, looking at the death of ISIS leader Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi in a U.S. attack a couple days ago. Are there lessons to be learned from the events over this weekend, the death of this leader of ISIS, that the U.S. could take combating ISIS or whatever ISIS morphs into next?
Well, I don't really see this as a battle against ISIS per se. I think it's a very long-term battle against the jihadi movement. And some of my colleagues really pay attention to, for example, the split between al-Qaeda and ISIS that you mentioned. I don't see it as important as the long-term jihadi movement that we are fighting, because if you look at the history of jihadi terrorism, it's very, very common that these groups split off. There are factions that split off. They change their names. They change their allegiances. They merge with groups that were formerly their arch enemies, and so on. So one of my colleagues has been predicting for quite some time, this is Bruce Hoffman, that al-Qaeda and ISIS would eventually merge. That was a position that was hard to defend for a while there when the two groups were so actively fighting. But right now, it does look like a real possibility that fighters from ISIS might switch allegiances. Some of them might switch allegiances and join with HTS or the group that is sometimes known as al-Qaeda in Syria.
From what you were just saying, though, it sounds like we should be looking at more than just a tactical battle against this group or that group, but a more fundamental effort against a particular ideology and a terrorist expression of that ideology. How do you do that?
That's a big question. Nobody's really figured it out yet. I mean, we've tried so-called counter-narratives. So the government has gotten involved in disseminating counter-narratives to show that ISIS was not at all the five-star jihad that it was advertising itself as, but was actually incredibly brutal. It didn't work very well. I think that the ideology will eventually fade in attractiveness. It's right now, it's an attractive ideology for those who aim to change the status quo. It will change over time. I mean, it's a fundamentalist ideology to turn the clock back to a so-called the Salafi aim to turn the clock back to a simpler golden era. And it's in many ways similar to other fundamentalist ideologies. The aim is to turn the clock back to an imaginary time when the world was simpler and better.
Is there a way that through U.S. foreign policy we can help lower the risk factors in countries around the world where young, I guess mostly young men, are attracted to this kind of extremist ideology?
Well, to the extent that we can help reduce sectarian tensions, that's something that we have been trying to do for a long time in Iraq. To the extent we can do that, to the extent that we can encourage not so much electoral democracy, but liberal institutions that protect religious minorities, religious or other minorities, then yes, perhaps there is a role we can play. I think Americans are beginning to lose tolerance, to the extent they ever had it, for trying to intervene in this way. I think Americans are feeling extremely discouraged about our capacity to resolve conflicts far away. We try, and we seem to get stuck in a long-term conflict and have trouble getting out without making things worse.
In our last few moments, what are you watching for next?
I guess I really am going to be curious how much we see a kind of merger and perhaps new factions splitting off of what remains of ISIS. That's something that I will be watching closely.
Thank you so much for joining us today. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Jessica Stern is a research professor at Boston University's Pardee School of Global Studies and co-author of ISIS, The State of Terror. We talked with her about her New York Times piece on the death of ISIS leader Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi and what it means for the broader fight against global terrorism.